Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMC ortho.
Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. A recent study out of Stony Brook found an increased risk for respiratory disease in 9/11 rescue workers with post-traumatic stress disorder. With that front of mind, we welcome Dr. Scott Beagle, a pulmonologist at Albany Medical Center. He specializes in interstitial lung disease, that is, lung disease caused by exposure to hazardous materials like asbestos. He also specializes in many other aspects of pulmonary critical care like pneumonia, sarcoidosis, COPD, pulmonary infections and embolism, and post-lung transplant care. Dr. Beagle earned his medical degree from Albany Medical College, completed his residency and fellowship in pulmonary critical care there as well. He's board certified by the American Board of Internal Medicine for both pulmonary disease and critical care medicine. Dr. Beagle, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Okay, got to get close to the microphone. Okay, so my question is this. Lungs are tricky, but there's a lot of diseases of the lungs that you can get that primary, but then you get cancers that are metastatic and the rest. And you don't operate, right? You're critical.
Correct.
You're a clinician.
Absolutely. The thoracic surgeons would be our counterpart in the surgery field.
Do you all get along?
We do.
You took a little too long when you said, I guess the first question is, what's the number one pulmonary problem that people experience, and what is it related to?
Usually diseases that concern cigarette smoking, COPD or emphysema or chronic bronchitis. What we kind of term is COPD now, is probably the most common, and it's the third leading cause of death in the United States as of about 2008. So it's very common.
And what about lung cancer?
Lung cancer is also very common, and also associated with cigarette smoking.
Mm-hmm. So you're not kidding me. In other words, when you tell me, you sit here and look at me and you say, cigarette smoking is really the worst thing you can do, you mean it, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Difficult habit to break. People do it multiple times. They get depressed about not being able to quit. But that shouldn't deter them to quit, because it takes a number of times to try to stop, to actually become a quitter. It takes a lot.
1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Jim, our friend Jim in Matamoros. Okay. Jim, you're on the air.
With all the increase in recent storms in the last couple of years, are you seeing an increased incidence of Stachybotrys roidum and other aspergillus-related diseases?
Okay, since there are those of us who have no idea what you're talking about, the doctor will explain to us, right?
Yes. So fungal diseases, allergies to various molds. We have not seen an increased number of infections related to these. Most of the fungal infections that we do see are related to the immunosuppression or the immune suppression that is associated with transplantation or chemotherapy.
Okay.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I've just done something I have never done before. Okay, so the number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. I guarantee you by the end of this show, you will not be able to get anywhere near this. So if you have a question, this is a great time to ask, because now is when this is going to happen. I feel I've got the whole world in my hands here. Okay, what does cigarette smoking actually do to you?
So cigarette smoking can cause many things. It predisposes you to obviously lung cancer, but damage to the airways in the lung, It causes inflammation throughout the body. It can cause or has been associated with osteoporosis, one of the common things that, you know, in general practice that women have, but it can also actually occur in men. But it creates total body inflammation, even outside the lung.
Oh, so the next question is this. What Dana's on the phone, so let's get her question. Okay. Dana, you wanted to ask a very pertinent and timely question. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Dana.
Yeah, we got it. Go ahead, Dana.
Yeah, it's a he.
I'm so sorry. Yeah.
It can go either way.
Yeah.
But my question was regarding to what's the doctor's opinion on the new e-cigarettes and / vaporizer type cigarettes? I know that none of the smoking is good for you, but what's his opinion on that new rave now, so to speak?
That's a great question. I think it's too early to know exactly what the effects of e-cigarettes are going to have long-term. They've been out for a few years. I'm not sure about the quality control that they have or if the quality control would be adequate anyways. But I think it's too early to know. A substitution that may be not as harmful, but certainly could have harm.
But you're still putting, let me see if I get this right, but you're still putting stuff in your lungs that would ordinarily not be there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, anytime you put something into your lungs, it's not good. So I'm very cautious about the e-cigarettes.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Dana. Appreciate it. Okay. That leaves one person a chance to get in, 1-800-348-2551, Michael in Albany. All right. Michael, you're on.
Yes, thank you very much. There was a recent article in the New York Times about emissions from using diesel fuel as being carcinogenic, and most tractors use diesel fuel. To make matters worse, the exhaust system for a tractor is up front, so when you're using the tractor, you're always riding into the emissions. My question really is, what do you think about this, whether you think that casual use of a tractor is a sufficient concern, being exposed to those carcinogens, and what is your comment about the exhaust on a tractor being in front of you rather than behind you?
That's a good question. Anytime you inhale petroleum products and also combustion of petroleum products, it will be a risk factor for having any type of environmental type of lung disorder. You could get airways disease, COPD, I suspect, from it. That probably has to do with when we get older, our lung actually ages, and it's probably related to the pollution that we encounter on a day-to-day. With respect to diesel versus gas, some people have said gas emissions are actually worse because the particles are finer and they could be inhaled more deeply into the lung, diesel less. But I think it's hard to weed out all of these environmental factors that we're exposed to today because as societies become more sophisticated, we have multiple things that we're exposed to throughout the day.
Okay. So, Michael, thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Middletown Medical's Pediatric Express, walk-in urgent care for children in Chester with a pediatrician available weeknights until 9 p.m. MiddletownMedical.com. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people. Nature.org/Adirondacks. midwives of the Hudson Valley and Capital Region, offering women's health care, maternity care, and home birth services throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital Regions. Midwives support WAMC.com. And Unison Arts Center, New Paltz, presenting the second annual Founders Day celebration with comedian and folk singer Christine Lavin. Saturday at 7, unisonarts.org.
And we are back. We are back. We're Dr. Beagle. He's talking to us about our lungs, and every phone has been busy. As soon as somebody hangs up, well, then you come on. Now, how can there be two number threes in a row? Okay, this is either Jim or Dick. Let's see. Is this Jim or is this Dick?
Jim from Skyler.
Okay, Jim, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, I have a question about the efficacy of Coumadin versus Xarelto, because I have factor 5 Leiden, and I went non-therapeutic on the Coumadin, and they moved me to Xarelto, and I on the Coumadin, I formed double pulmonary embolisms, which required heart surgery to, open heart surgery to get everything squared away. And I know that the Xarelto, there's no checking to see if it's working. I guess it's just a matter of faith that it's working properly. That's my question.
Okay, so my question, to add on to your very good question, Jim, for the doctor, is what's an embolism again?
A pulmonary embolism is a blood clot that usually travels from the legs to the lung circulation. So, and a number of things can cause it. Trauma can cause it. A surgical procedure could predispose you to it. Cancers can predispose. Or, like in Jim's case, he has a heritable coagulopathy, or he is prone to clotting.
I remember my father had it. He had to keep his leg up all the time. Has that changed?
Well, that's probably for swelling of his legs or some valvular problems in his leg veins.
Right. Okay, Jim, you want to follow up on that?
Your question was about Xarelto or Rivaroxaban. There's a number of new oral anticoagulants that are out that are really competing with an old drug, Coumadin.
Right.
And these drugs usually inhibit one part of the clotting pathway, and they do not require any monitoring like Coumadin does. The efficacy of these drugs is equivalent to that of Coumadin. So the studies that have been done have shown equivalence to Coumadin in their the goal to prevent further clotting, either a blood clot in the leg or a blood clot in the lung. The upside of them are that in general they have less bleeding complications. And they're oral, and there's no monitoring, so they're convenient, but they are more expensive.
Isn't the idea not to let the clot go from the leg to the lung?
That is the hope, that we don't let that happen, but sometimes it does, and in Jim's case, and I hope he's doing well.
And how do you know when it gets there?
People usually have shortness of breath and chest pain. It can be rapid in onset. Sometimes it's slow, but it's usually rapid chest pain or rapid onset of chest pain. You may have fluttering of your heart and shortness of breath.
Can you x-ray it?
You can't x-ray it, but you can do a CAT scan with contrast in the blood vessels, and you can see the blood clot in the pulmonary vasculature then.
Jim, anything else?
Yeah, when I formed the double pulmonary embolisms, I couldn't walk 20 feet.
You were very short of breath. Did you have chest pain?
I had no chest pain. I got weak-headed and had to stop and catch myself, and they finally flew me to Robert Packer Hospital for the procedure.
Did you have any fluttering of your heart or almost passing out?
Almost passing out, yeah. And I had an ASD where the clot was lodged.
Wow. You're very lucky.
Was it an ASD?
An atrial septal defect. Oh. So that's a hole from the right side to the left side of the heart, and the heart could then pass through into the clot could pass through that hole and actually go to the brain or either limbs or things like that.
And do you have to work closely with the cardiac guys?
We do. We use some of their knowledge and their equipment, especially the ultrasounds of the heart, although we're doing more and more of that today. But we do work closely with cardiology to look at the function of the heart.
Jim, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Yeah.
Let's go to Dick in Longmeadow. Dick in Longmeadow, you're there.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. The first is, with all the advent of the new antibiotics, you have cephalosporins and aminoglycosides and so forth, are you seeing less gram-negative pneumonias today than you saw maybe 10 or 15 years ago? That's the first question. And I'm thinking of something like if someone had a Klebsiella pneumonia years and years ago, they were in pretty deep trouble. That's the first question. And the second one is I've read in the Lancet and in New England Journal that lung cancer, which is very difficult to diagnose in early stages, can be diagnosed about 25% earlier with a higher cure rate with a circular CAT scan. And I was wondering if you could comment on those two questions. And thank you.
Absolutely. First, with respect to the antibiotics, there are a lot of different antibiotics out there. There are still gram-negative pneumonias. Gram-negative, generally, bacteria are stained either gram-positive, they look purple under the microscope, or gram-negative, they look red under the microscope. There are gram-positive and gram-negative infections, both in the lung. Mainly what's caused changes in the bacteria that we see are immunosuppressants for connective tissue disease, like arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, things like that, and chemotherapy has kind of changed the type of bacteria that we may see in the lungs. The second question has to do with lung cancer screening, and it's there are recommendations out there for screening smokers with a particular pack year at certain ages. And the idea is that it is diagnosed at a earlier stage, and hopefully when you diagnose somebody at an earlier stage, you're going to have a better chance for a cure. We haven't done a great job with lung cancer over the past 10, 20 years, but hopefully this may be an answer to that.
What's the lung cancer survival rate these days?
So if probably the best fact that I could tell the listeners is if you all comers, if you don't have surgery, probably your average survival is 2 to 3 years if you don't have surgery. If you do have surgery, then you have a chance for a cure. But that's probably the most important kind of informational statistic.
And that's a real development, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, the CAT scanner, a lot of people in the medical community looking at low-dose CAT scan screening for it, there's really two sides of it. And some people believe that it will help, some don't. But the current recommendations are out there, and we are following them.
That's great. Okay, thank you, Dick.
Thank you, sir.
Right. Let us go to... Raymond in Great Barrington. Okay, Raymond, go ahead.
Hello. Since I don't want to take up a lot of time, I've actually this time made a note, and I'll just say what I have to say and then wait. This is concerning marijuana as compared to tobacco in terms of harmful contents and issues. While marijuana has so many ways that it's consumed, you'd have to come up with a standard. Anyway.
Okay, but Raymond, is your question?
Okay.
Yeah.
The vaporizer question, it's those machines heat to exactly the right temperature to extract the THC. When you look in them, there's nothing burned when you're done. So you get no tars or particulates and so on. Theoretically, it's just that vapor which looks like steam. So that consideration of vaporizers and some form of comparison between marijuana and tobacco health-wise.
Okay, so what's the question? You want him to answer, Dr. Beadle, to answer...
Those two things.
Well, okay, so you're giving us a choice. You can take, you can use pot, you can use tobacco, you can use e-cigs. Which is the worst? We know the answer to that, right, Doctor? It's tobacco, right?
Absolutely. Tobacco is, and we have a lot of great data on tobacco not being good for you. And in many different forms of tobacco, is not good, whether you chew it, whether you smoke it. But the data is there, and it can cause many different things and even go outside the lung.
Now, what about pot?
So it's worse than, yes, what about pot?
Well,
I'm way ahead of you.
I don't think
I see that.
I don't think there's any head-to-head data that's out there, at least none that I'm familiar with respect to marijuana. I really don't know the answer to that.
Okay, but Raymond, I hate to give you a hard time, but isn't this a bit of a false premise? In other words, you know, which of them should I do? Somebody may be asking, should I do?
It's not that. It's a simple matter of curiosity.
Oh,
and
okay.
Also, I don't recommend. I couldn't stand smoking cigarettes,
right,
or anything at this age. But
what age?
I do think 67.
A mere child. Yeah, go ahead.
But I do think the vaporizers are, I'm not recommending everyone go out and buy them and smoke whatever they want because the vaporizer is so safe. But I've done a lot of extractions for analysis for the state of Maine, and the vaporizers made for use with marijuana are really quite a clever idea.
Okay, Raymond, we got a lot of people behind you. We appreciate
okay,
the call.
If he could just give me a nutshell of that whole package.
He did already. He said smoking is bad for you. E-cigs, we don't know. We don't know yet. And pot, he says he doesn't know enough about it. That's what he said.
Right. Well, I'm throwing in the vaporizer question too. Maybe that's just my 2 cents worth.
Okay, well, it's worth a lot more than 2 cents. Thank you, Raymond. Appreciate it.
I don't recommend smoking.
No, indeed. Okay, we'll go to Irene in New Paltz. Irene in New Paltz, you're on.
Yes, my question is, how is asthma diagnosed, and can allergies lead to asthma? If so, does that work? And if so, do taking antihistamines or anti-allergy over-the-counter medicines help to prevent development of asthma?
Good question. So I would think of it this way with respect to allergies and asthma. There's one airway. That airway starts at your nose and ends in your lungs. And so allergies are related to asthma. Whether there's no medication to prevent allergies going to asthma, that is really a predisposition that's probably occurred early in childhood and has some genetics also to do with it. But allergies, you can have allergies without asthma. You can have allergies and asthma together. But controlling your allergies can help you control your asthma if you have them both. The second part of your question was, how do you diagnose asthma? And
yes,
a lot of that is based on symptoms or the story that you're telling the physician who's taking care of you. If it starts early on, you have sensitivities to cats or dogs or dusts, that's an important factor. Again, at an earlier age of onset, a family history, maybe if you had skin rashes as a child, and then doing pulmonary function testing, which actually measures capacities and flows coming out of your lung, we can get an idea, and also giving you medications that may predispose you to having your airways close down a little bit, and then doing those pulmonary function testing. That's called a methacholine challenge.
A metha what?
A methacholine challenge.
Okay.
It's a particular type of pulmonary function testing.
Okay.
Irene, thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yep. 1-800-348-2551. Got a very good chance of getting in. And now, let's go to Mike in Schenectady. All right, Mike, you're on.
Hi, I got a question. When I was 5 years old, I had tuberculosis. I was treated for it and followed up with yearly x-rays. I was wondering, as an adult, if there's any ramifications from that. Am I susceptible to something down the road or it coming back or...
Okay, fair enough. Let me ask you, ask Dr. Scott Beadle a question. What is TB again? Well, how do we get it?
Tuberculosis. It's a human-to-human. It's an airborne disease. Somebody has to have an active infection with tuberculosis. You need to be in close contact with them. You inhale a small droplet of a material that goes all the way down into your lungs, and you can either become, and this is where it gets complicated, you can either get an infection at that time or just have an exposure. And that exposure is actually an infection too. But people do not always get active TB once they're exposed to tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. It could be a latent infection.
And how do we cure it?
Usually multiple different types of anti-tuberculous antibiotics, specific, and generally they're quite specific for the bacteria, but usually 4 drugs for 2 months and 2 drugs for 4 months. So usually a 6 month regimen of medication.
Okay, so Mike wanted to know about the ramifications of having TB as a child.
If you completed the treatment course, you are unlikely to get it or have a reactivation of that in the future if you were treated adequately. You may have some scar or some calcifications in your lung. You may have some distortion of your lung. But many people have who have been treated with tuberculosis really don't have any other problems.
And they sent Doc Holliday up to the hills in Colorado to live after Wyatt was done with him. The question is, do they still do that?
Not that I know of, but there used to be places in, I guess, in upstate New York and Lake Placid and things like that. But not anymore.
Okay. Mike, anything else?
I have a follow-up question about the scar. Now, they told me I had a scar, and when I was a child, they used to x-ray it every year. I stopped doing that as an adult because they saw no need to x-ray anymore. Do I have to worry about this scar?
It's unlikely that you do have to worry about that scar. There is something called scar cancers that can occur, but it's unlikely if you're not a tobacco user. You probably don't have to worry much about that.
Hey, Mike, that's all we got time for on this one. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. All right, let's go to Mary in Niskayuna. Okay, Mary, you go.
Hi, my name is Nancy.
I'm so sorry. I have a sight problem here. Go ahead.
No problem. Thank you for taking my call. I have so many questions. I don't know which one to get in first. I'm going to have surgery in about a month and a half. Very much overweight. I've never been diagnosed with asthma, but I do have that wheezing. Is there any test to take? I've never had it before, the anesthesia. Any test to take regarding anything, allergic reaction or anything with the lung?
So in general, you're overweight and you're going for bariatric surgery?
No. Just surgery.
Just regular surgery.
But I've never had it before, and, you know, I do wheeze. You know, I have my own private entrance in my apartment. Man next door smokes. Talk about secondhand smoke, but every once in a while I get a whiff of smoke in my apartment, and I don't know if I'm getting this secondhand smoke, do you think? And what to do?
You probably are getting some secondhand smoke, but if you're wheezing and you're going to have a major surgical procedure, you should probably go to see your regular physician. He may or may not refer you to a lung doctor, but you may need pulmonary function testing and such, like a breathing test.
Oh, so you recommend do that before surgery just to be on the safe side?
Well, it's hard to say, but I think that your doctor would, could certainly listen to your lungs and see if he could hear that wheezing. You know,
I have a murmur, mild, and he did do sleep apnea. Blood work came out 40, 60 mean sleep apnea.
Right, and that was the other thing, in people that are overweight going for surgery, probably the two tests that they should have prior to them having a major surgical procedure is an evaluation for sleep apnea and an evaluation of their lungs with a breathing test, a pulmonary function testing.
Nancy, I'm so sorry. We're up against a hard break here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll be taking more calls when we come back with Dr. Scott Beagle, a pulmonologist, an excellent one, as you can hear. So Nancy, hang in there, and Pauline, hang in there, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, less than 50 miles from Albany, offering minimally invasive procedures for back pain with Dr. Ja'an Shen, NLH.org. Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havokin Wealth Strategies, serving Western Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement, HavokinWealthStrategies.com. River Valley Market, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalleymarket.coop. And the Ulysses S. Grant Cottage, Wilton, New York, celebrating International Peace Day, September 21st, with a concert by Magpie and reflection and recognition for our soldiers, grantcottage.org.
And we are back with Dr. Scott Beagle. Ladies and gentlemen, we have, less than 20 minutes. If you want to get a call in now on a lung issue, now's the time to do it. We've got a Nancy in the Catskills. Okay, Nancy, you're on.
Yes. I have a brother who is remarkably brilliant and expressively emotional and watched our father die of lung cancer and emphysema from smoking, and has children that he loves supporting, and a viable and active law practice, and is very public. And I probably know the answer to this question, but is there anything that any of us can do to help him achieve his ability to quit smoking?
A difficult addiction to break. People try multiple times. I was kind of alluding to this in the beginning of the show. Oftentimes, the average person who quits smoking has tried to quit seven times prior to them actually being successful. I think being supportive, understanding why somebody smokes, whether it's to kind of control anxiety, if it's just a physical habit. There are chemical changes in the brain that occur with it, controlling those. It's a very difficult habit to break once you've done it for years. And I think the only thing that I could recommend is kind of a multi-pronged approach where the patient has to be involved, their physician has to be involved, either helping them with nicotine replacement, giving them medications that may alter the urge to smoke, and controlling the positive feedback that occurs with smoking. But I think just being very supportive and the family understanding that it's a difficult thing to do.
Well, I no longer say anything. Investigate or question, or when he goes out to smoke and come back in. I mean, it's sort of a non-topic. And it has been years. I also know that it fuels a lot of energy that he needs for his practice. So, you know, and he's had his teeth are falling out, all of that. So I guess you can be supportive, but I guess it really needs to come from the patient.
Absolutely. He has to want to stop smoking, and he has to make the commitment, and that's when he'll be successful.
Nancy, yeah. Nancy, got to let you go. Thank you very much for that very important call. Thank you. 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are superb. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Pauline in Rexford. Pauline, you're on.
Oh, hello?
Hey, you're on.
Hi. Okay. My question is about I smoked for quite a while, and 20 years ago I gave it up. 3 years ago I had a chest x-ray, and when I didn't hear back from the doctor's office, I called, and the nurse said, oh, you've got a little COPD. And she was very casual about it. I, of course, got really upset and started Googling everything I could. And my question is, when you're told you have a little COPD, does that mean a little asthma, a little emphysema? And if it's a little, can it become worse even though you're no longer smoking?
Well, it's not diagnosed by a chest x-ray. A lot of people think that you can tell that a patient has COPD by an x-ray, but the diagnosis is based on breathing tests, not chest x-rays. That's a common misconception. They may see findings that are consistent with COPD. When we talk about COPD, there are two diseases that we kind of lump in together. That's emphysema and chronic bronchitis. And the reason that we lump them in together is because there's a lot of overlap with patients. But I would suggest for you to get a correct diagnosis, you need a breathing test. Otherwise,
I did have one, and I asked for it, and I was told that my lung capacity was roughly around 80% to 82%, and I don't know how bad or good that is. It doesn't sound good to me, but then someone said that's not bad.
Well, 80% and above could be quite normal for you, and I guess that's where they got the little term from. But I think that. Stopping smoking was the best thing that you could have done for yourself and the disease that you have.
If only I hadn't started, I know. Okay, well,
thanks
you very
Pauline.
Much.
Thanks, Pauline. Appreciate
okay.
it. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and now we'll go to Julie in Kingston, 1-800-348-2551. Julie, you're on.
Hi. I just have a quick question about at night. I'm allergic to dust mites. That's my big thing, and whatever is blooming right now bothers me as well. So I take a Zyrtec every day, but at night, the squeaking in my chest wakes me up, and it drives me crazy, especially this time of year. Is there an over-the-counter inhaler that you can get that'll open up the airways and stop that squeaking?
I'm not sure. There used to be an over-the-counter inhaler called Primatene Mist that had epinephrine or adrenaline in it. I would suggest that if it is available, that you don't use it. These medications can stimulate the heart as well as stimulate the airways. And taking it without a true diagnosis of whether you have asthma or COPD is probably not something you want to do. If you take too much of that medication, you can drive the potassium down in your body and in your heart, and you can have an irregular heart rhythm. So I would suggest if you're wheezing or having some squeaking, I would suggest that you go to your physician and they start an evaluation for possible asthma.
Oh, okay. It's just at night when I'm sleeping. It just kind of settles in there and gurgles away. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
You also have to make sure there's not a mouse in your bed.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The squeaking would do that. Okay, let's go to Cindy in Voorheesville. All right, Cindy, you're on.
Wow, that was a noise.
It was my head bumping against the microphone.
Okay. I can't see any. I'm down to about 10 cigarettes a day, and I have been smoking since about 65. I'm not sure. And I can't see that it's going to make much difference in my life.
So you're about 80 years old, is that right?
I am actually 80 years old, yes.
I did the math. That's a lie.
Oh, you're very good.
That's a lie. Okay, so the question is, why stop?
Yeah, I mean, what's the point? You know, little by little, I'm going to run out of money and all that kind of stuff. But I was curious to know, what difference would it make in my body if I suddenly stopped now at this age after I smoked for so long a period of time?
Well, I think that stopping smoking at any age is good for you. I think that if you have a cough and...
Don't.
Okay. But you could certainly have some more energy. you could actually possibly live longer.
How much?
Well, I don't know.
You're not going to go on that one, huh?
No, it's hard for me to predict the future. And if I could predict the future, I certainly wouldn't be in the field that I'm in. But,
yes, but statistically, your answer is, obviously, that you will live, the chances are much better living longer if you don't smoke, right?
Absolutely. And you'll live with more money. Absolutely.
More money. although Cindy did raise the issue of running out of money.
No, I did not.
Oh, you didn't? I thought you
did. No, I did not.
Okay, very good.
That's not my problem.
Okay, well, good.
I was just wondering, you know, this is the one little kind of thing in my life that gives me pleasure, because the rest is day-to-day boredom. And I can't move around much, and so, you know, this to me is my thrill, if you want to call it that. I don't, but if you
Cindy,
want
Cindy, what do you want the poor guy to tell you? I mean, he knows the stats, which are...
Well,
that people
I just want to know, what difference would it really make if I stopped smoking after smoking for, you know, 70 years or almost 70 years.
Well, I think it's a good time to stop anytime. You know, I think that you may feel dramatically better. It may take a few months after you stop smoking, but I think that you may find something else that gives you the same pleasure or the same thrill. There's lots of things out there.
Cindy, I wish we could go on, but we got a lot of people on the line.
All righty.
Thanks.
Thank you.
A lot. Bye. Let's go to Sylvia in Napanock. Okay, Sylvia, you're on.
Hi. My husband was diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis about 5 years ago, and they gave him like 5 years. But they said recently that he has not progressed anymore. So I was just calling to find out if it's possible that it would not get worse. Or is there some kind of medication he could be taking? Because we couldn't find out about any kind of medication, and maybe he should get a second opinion.
Okay, now we're in the lightning round. We're about to run out of time, so go ahead, Doc. We want to get as many calls as possible.
Sure. So pulmonary fibrosis, we call it idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. It's a disease that has really had a limelight recently, because there will be, hopefully by the end of the year, two new medications that are out there. You're right that in general, people live 2 to 5 years after the diagnosis. If somebody is not progressing, what comes to my mind is that the diagnosis may not be actually correct. Did he have a biopsy of his lung?
No.
So this was made on based on a CAT scan. So... it may be the wrong diagnosis, or a diagnosis that's very similar or in the same family, and therefore possibly a second opinion could be helpful. But usually people progress. Mm-hmm. But there will be two drugs, hopefully the FDA will approve later on in November for this fatal disease.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you.
Thank
that's
you, Sylvia. Thanks, Sylvia.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's go to Lisa in Utica. Lisa, you're on.
Good afternoon. My question is concerning the fact that 12 years ago, I was diagnosed with a DVT. And at that time, it was also determined that I had Leiden factor 5, And I know very little about Leiden factor 5, and even trying to look it up online, the terminology is a little beyond what I can understand. The only thing I do know about it is that it's a genetic disease, which means that I have inherited it from one of my parents.
Okay, I'm so sorry, Lisa, for interfering, but we really have to finish this up because there are three people behind you.
Can you tell me more about Leiden factor 5?
Fine.
Sure. It's a disease that promotes clotting of the blood. It can usually occur in Caucasians. You can be heterozygote, meaning that you have one gene, or homozygote, you have two genes. It can predispose to the first clot, but not necessarily to the second clot. So if you have the first clot, you get blood thinners for a period of time. It may or may not predispose to a second clot, but it does run in the family, and your family members should be tested for it, especially if they have a blood clot.
Okay. Thanks,
Lisa.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Donna in Saratoga. Donna, faster the better.
Hi there. I just need some education. I had a CAT scan, for something else, and they found a nodule in my lower lung, and this kind of surprising. I'm very healthy. I've never smoked. What should I be concerned about? How should I have it checked? Can you just give me some education on it?
Sure. How old are you?
53, and I run 4.5 miles a day. I have never smoked. I'm very fit, and I was totally surprised.
So you're at low risk. You're at low risk for having it. You probably should have a follow-up CAT scan, and it should be a low-dose CAT scan, low dose, and that'll reduce the amount of radiation that they do during that CAT scan.
And how often should I have these done?
Well, you should have at least one in approximately 1 year, and it all depends on the size, but probably next year you should talk with your physician, and you should probably have a low-dose CAT scan at that time. And if it's stable over a few years and you're not a smoker, you're going to be at low risk for having a cancer.
Thanks, Donna. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Yep. Let's go to Deb in Oneonta. Deb, it's got to be a very short question. Go ahead.
Okay, well, it will be because he sort of answered it.
Uh-huh.
I lost my husband to pulmonary fibrosis this past February, and I was just going to ask if there's anything on the horizon to help that situation for others, and he answered that question. So.
He did.
Well, he said there were a couple of new things coming out to help that, people with pulmonary fibrosis. I was very glad to hear that.
There's two new drugs that are going to go be for the FDA in November, and there's multiple clinical studies that are going on with different medications. So should have some choices in the future.
That's a wonderful thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deb.
Bye.
Barry, it's got to be in one sentence. Go ahead. We're really out of time here. Go ahead.
Is there anything new on the horizon for sufferers of alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency?
It's the same therapy before that, obviously no smoking for alpha-1. Alpha-1 is a genetic cause of COPD or emphysema. It can run in families. Basically you get an infusion of the product that you're missing, and you have to stop smoking before you get that infusion, but that is the only one.
Okay, Barry, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're right. Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave Roland on the line. Thank you, everybody who called in today. I apologize to Roland. I would also like to say thank you, a very big thank you, to Dr. Scott Beagle for joining us today. For more information on Dr. Beagle and his practice, visit wamc.org. Support for Medical Mondays comes from Topperson, developed to provide relief for those living in pain associated with neuropathy and fibromyalgia. Topperson.com. Thanks again for joining us, everybody, on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Stacey Perry Rosenberry came in here to fix something. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.